And then the chances.
Quiet, please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I think that the liberal news media needs a little bit of cheese to go along with its whining. And boy, are they whining lately. In fact, it makes up where I'd like to start with all of this. And that has to do with the Trump administration, which now the major news media, which is used to enjoying rather broad access to American politicians, especially when it comes to presidents, because most presidents are afraid of the media. Donald Trump is not. And see, that scares the news media because they worry if he's not afraid of us, of what we might, you know, write or say about him, then we don't have the kind of control and access we usually do. Meanwhile, over at the Pentagon, they've got some new rules in place. Are any of the rest of you tired the way I am of all the leaks that come out of the Pentagon? Because leaks and the Pentagon go together like nobody's business. If you consider and think back through any administration, Republican or Democrat, the Pentagon leaks like a sieve. And apparently, President Trump has decided that he's going to end those leaks. And one of the ways to do that is that they're going to restrict the access of reporters, but not in a way, despite what the reporters say, that is going to take away their First Amendment freedoms. Now, what the War Secretary Pete Hegseth has said is that reporters who are visiting the Pentagon have to wear an identity badge that shows who they are and who they're with. Look, every time I've gone inside a government facility like that, you have to wear something that identifies you as press. Otherwise, you can have people wandering around into areas they're not allowed to go into. And here's one thing you should remember. When it comes to the Pentagon is literally the largest office building on planet Earth when it comes to the number of square feet. If I remember right, it's about 11 million square feet of office space. It is the biggest office building on planet Earth. And what's inside of that? Multiple rings. Some of them are off limits altogether. But what all they've said is you have to wear a badge, you can't roam around on your own, and you can't solicit criminal acts. And if you wonder, well, what kind of criminal act might a reporter solicit? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a reporter who says, hey, can you get me a copy of that classified report? Because we'd like to put it on the front page of the New York Times at some point, or the Washington Post, or an ABC, NBC, CBS, or PBS. I mean, those folks love to leak stuff out of the Pentagon, and sometimes it does good things for America, and more often it does bad things to America. So, should the news media accept the new Pentagon rules aimed at restricting leaks? Again, wear badges, can't roam around on your own, and can't solicit criminal acts. And the Pentagon has said, this isn't asking you to agree with those policies. This is just asking you acknowledge that you know what the rules are. And if you break the rules, you're going to lose your access. That doesn't sound unfair to me. I mean, I haven't been to the Pentagon in a long, long time. I was there for the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attack, so that would have made it 2006. But when we were there, you had to wear a badge around your neck, and there were places you weren't allowed to go. So it's not unusual. Should the news media accept new Pentagon rules aimed at restricting leaks? I'd answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the X poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. But let me tell you the crazier thing that the news media is whining about now. And the latest story comes from the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, that is OregonLive.com, what used to be a daily newspaper, The Oregonian. And what are they saying? Headline says, and this only broke a few hours ago, Trump administration doling out access to select right-wing media policies equates to propaganda, experts say. Now, what expert are they talking to? Are they talking to, say, a top journalism professor? No, they're talking to an anthropology professor from Princeton University. And this guy is saying it is very clear that the Trump administration, with its immigration policies or policies about sending the National Guard into Democrat-run cities, is engaging in blatant propaganda. This is an abuse of persuasion. He even goes on to say it's a hallmark of authoritarianism. Oh, my goodness. Oh, the humanity. You know what's really happening? If you want anybody to believe that Donald Trump is the first president in American history who's actually played favorites when it came to the press, oh, no, no, no. There's been plenty of playing favorites. Take the media's favorite recent president. That wouldn't be Biden, because Biden could barely string a sentence together. And most of the time, his answers to questions had to be scripted, and the reporters had to agree to scripted questions. So that's a problem just to begin with. Why in the world did most of America's press that covered Biden directly and up close and personal, why did they agree to ask scripted questions to which they knew the president was going to read scripted answers off a 3x5 card? That's not journalism. That's theater. But that's what they did during Joe Biden for 4 years, because most of the reporters, and there were some of them who knew at the time that Joe Biden wasn't all there upstairs, his brain wasn't exactly firing on all cylinders, but they went along with the gag anyway because it got them great access. But no, Barack Hussein Obama, I would say he is bar none the media's favorite president. And why? Well, because he was the first black president, and they saw that as a big deal, and so did Barack Obama. He never got tired of reminding us. So what did Obama do? Did he grant special access to black journalists? He absolutely positively did. Did he grant as special access to black-owned media like Jet Magazine and Ebony Magazine and others? He absolutely did. He gave what was described even at the time as unprecedented access to the White House during his administration, and that gave him increased coverage and visibility for black-owned media. And guess what? They returned the favor. They treated him very, very well. So what's got the major media all in a dither today beyond what's going on at the Pentagon? They're upset because when Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem visited the ICE headquarters in Portland last week, that there were conservative social media, because the media picture, the media landscape has changed, who are allowed some extra access. They got into the building with the Homeland Security Secretary. And why didn't she give the same kind of access to all reporters? Because I don't think there's ever been an American president who gave the same kind of access to all reporters. Republican administrations tend to give more favor to publications like the Wall Street Journal or National Review. The liberal administrations like Biden and Clinton and Obama, they love the New York Times. They love the Washington Post, or they did until recently. So saying that some reporters get more access than others is nothing brand new. And as far as it meaning propaganda, well, if you're going to suggest that that was propaganda, then Obama engaged in the same kind of propaganda. Biden engaged in the same kind of propaganda. Clinton engaged in the same kind of propaganda. In fact, Clinton's White House literally had Lisa Caputo, who made a list, and she said, these are our friends in the media, and they got special treatment. Did the Daily Dead Fish rapper object to that at the time? Of course they didn't, because they were in the favored group. Now that they're in the non-favored group, well, they whine a lot these days, but it really doesn't mean much. Back in just a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go first on the Lars Larson Show, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Portland. He's up before you are, weeding out the right from the wrong. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right, you know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That Great Moment Every Day, where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Ah, so lawmakers just passed the biggest state tax hike in history based on Oregon's claim that the government is critically short on cash. And now we learn the state has budgeted to spend in the next 2 years a stunning $1.5 billion on health care for, wait for it, illegal aliens. $1.5 billion on health care for illegals. Now, do those two facts add up in your mind? We're short of cash, but we got $1.5 billion for illegals. It surely doesn't add up for me. The state's legislative field office did a review of budgets and found that Oregon will spend twice as much cash on illegal aliens as it spends on its own state police. Now, 25% of that amount comes from the federal government. The rest of it comes from taxpayers in the state of Oregon. Now, you might wonder, how can Oregon give Medicaid to illegals when federal law specifically forbids it? That's easy. Insurance fraud. Oregon puts big taxes on hospitals. The hospitals then add the cost of the taxes to the medical care they bill Medicaid for, and they send the bill to Medicaid. Oregon then takes the tax money it gets from the taxes, which is just laundered Medicaid money, and funds health insurance for illegals in violation of federal law. Now, if you or I did such a thing, we'd be charged with insurance fraud. You could even go to jail or prison. Tina Kotek does it and then claims the state is broke and can't go on without big new taxes, which, by the way, she does not want put to a vote. Glad to have you with me on a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, where we proudly serve the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day today is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Jim Arter writes in, Lars, so it sounds like airports in Portland, Seattle, Phoenix, Buffalo, Westchester, New York have decided not to play the message from the Trump administration and Kristi Noem in regards to the Democrats are the reason why getting through security is taking so long. The Democrats call it political jargon. So it's political when it's the truth about your party, but when it's lies about the other party, it's not political. I get it now. Lars, like you always say, if the Democrats didn't have double standards, they would have no standards at all. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I would ask you this question because this is why I awarded today's Daily Grill. Why would any city decide to give billions of dollars to its school district to build brand new schools and then end up with thousands and thousands of empty desks because they don't have enough kids to fill the schools? Well, it's just the question that's answered by John Charles, who's one of the people at the Cascade Policy Institute, which is a free market think tank. He says the failure of PPS, that's Portland Public Schools, to use enrollment data in properly sizing future high schools, coupled with the reality of declining enrollments and decreasing birth rates in Portland, is becoming an increasing concern in the face of the district's money crisis, and people are starting to take notice. As he points out, if PPS moves forward to build the schools it plans to build under the current design plans for Jefferson, Cleveland, and Wells High School, the district is projected to have, by 2030, just 4 years from now, 3,000 empty student desks in its high schools by 2030. 3,000 empty spaces. He says one example is Benson High, which has, right now, about 900 students in a building that they have built with a capacity for 1,700 students. $1 billion in construction bonds to build expensive and then empty classrooms. And if you say, well, they built the bigger high school at Benson, 1,700 spaces, when they only have 900 students because they're expecting growth. No, the district's own numbers say they expect to see enrollment decline, which means they could literally end up with a building that is one half empty. Brand spanking new, cost a lot of money, but absolutely half empty. Now, if that makes sense to any of you, I'd be happy to take the naysayer call if it makes sense that billions of dollars is being spent on classrooms where thousands of classrooms are simply classroom spaces are simply going to be empty. Our email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LawrenceLarson.com. It comes from Scott, and it's brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They did it for me. I hired Cap Concrete Coatings, and boy, they did a great job. Just go to CapConcreteCoatings.com or 855-CAP-THAT to call them. Scott says, Lars, one of the arguments I have heard for keeping illegals here is that they are willing to do the work Americans are not willing to do. That is false. I remember writing a similar email to you several years ago about my experience. There was an opening for an entry-level gardening position at the Seattle Parks Department. To qualify for the job or even be considered, you had to take a civil service exam. The exam was held at a big lecture hall at Seattle Central Community College. The room was filled to capacity. There must have been 500 people there. Now, why would 500 people apply for a hard labor job? Well, consider what city employment offers. You get a check every 2 weeks plus benefits and a retirement pension. Job security. What that experience taught me is that Americans will do the hard work if they are appropriately compensated for, and I agree with you on that, Scott. Why were 10 million illegals sent in? I suspect the Democrats want voters, and some of the Republicans want cheap labor. By the way, I placed number 11 on the test. That got me an interview, but I did not get hired. Imagine that, 500 people going after a hard labor job. Glad to have you with me on a Tuesday, and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Check out our X poll today. Should the news media accept new Pentagon rules that are aimed at restricting leaks at the Pentagon? I would argue, yes, it's reasonable. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Yesterday's poll, I asked you this. Should ICE comply with Seattle's new mask and badge rules or push back on the city's limits? I said 4% said they should comply. I did not vote that. 96% said push back. In other words, the answer I gave, because we've talked to the lawyers, Seattle has no business, legal authority otherwise, to be able to tell ICE how they have to dress, whether or not they can wear face masks and things like that. And you know what I can't wait for? I can't wait for the day when Seattle police run right into that same rule and somebody files a complaint and says, why, your police officers have their faces covered. And if Seattle Police Department says, well, that's because they're on a drug raid or they're going after gang members and we have to protect their privacy. Wait until you have it pointed out that Bruce Harrell's new rule is going to apply to them just like it applies to ICE. Coming up in a moment about that executive order from Bruce Harrell banning ICE agents from wearing face masks and requiring visible badges, we're going to talk to a top attorney who deals in that subject about whether or not Seattle can expect ICE to comply. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Wherever and whenever you want it. Get the podcasts all day, every day at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. And for the life of me, over the years, as we've talked about issues involving illegal aliens and federal enforcement of immigration law, I honestly never thought we'd get to the point where we'd be asking the question, can an individual city or state tell the federal government how to go about enforcing immigration law? In fact, I'll remind you that during Barack Obama's time as president, the state of Arizona literally said, if you're not going to enforce the federal immigration laws, then we, the state of Arizona, will do that. That one went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which said to Arizona in no uncertain terms, you have absolutely no role in enforcing or not enforcing federal immigration law. Now, you'd think that would make it very, very clear. And then you get Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, who signed two executive orders. It was the middle of last week. And what they say that they're for, this is how the coverage locally of the mayor, which is fairly favorable, he's aiming to stave off what he can of President Donald Trump's federal encroachments into American cities. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. It's as though these cities believe that they are somehow not part of the United States. I mean, anybody, not even somebody who's going to law school, almost anybody could tell you, when you have a country like this, you have a federal government with defined responsibilities. There are a lot of things the federal government should never get involved in. All of those are outside of the enumerated powers. But the enumerated powers of the federal government, it is in charge of immigration. And what does it do to enforce that? It looks at the laws written by the United States Congress, not laws written by state legislatures, not laws that are or executive orders from governors or mayors. The federal government is in charge of immigration. So what happens? Bruce Harrell says, I don't like what Donald Trump's doing, and he's encroaching on our city. Well, news to Bruce Harrell, mayor of Seattle, your city is part of the United States of America. Last time I checked, one of the orders is aimed at preparing for the possibility that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is going to ramp up its activities in the Emerald City. The multiple other steps to be taken by city departments, he has directed his city council to come up with an ordinance that bans law enforcement from wearing face masks, except in limited situations. I think that's absolutely nuts, because he's going to tell federal law enforcement how they're allowed to put on gear that is protective gear. Now, most protective gear is things like bulletproof vests and helmets and things like that. It's to protect against physical assaults. I think all of us understand that with Antifa and the anti-immigration enforcement people out there, they want to find out who those ICE officers are. And the only possible purpose to identifying those people is to go after them personally. Because if you say, well, what if an ICE officer decides to go out and commit an assault against somebody and uses excessive force? By all means, bring a lawsuit. And at that point, you'll be allowed what's called, what the lawyers call, discovery. You'll be allowed to find out exactly, you know, which officers were involved. All of that will be in the discovery information you get. Does it help you one little bit to find out that officer's name is Jim Jones, and then use that information so you can look up his home address and dox him and dox his family and everything else? No, you can't do that. So, in this case, the mayor of Seattle is saying, we're going to tell the ICE agents what they're allowed to do. Agents would also be required to display visible emblems and badges that identify their agency. As though when there's a group of law enforcement out arresting illegal aliens in a sanctuary state, anybody has to wonder, well, where are those people coming from? What law enforcement agency are they part of? Well, they're not part of the sanctuary state's law enforcement because they're forbidden by law to get involved in ICE enforcement. In any case, I'm glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And what's always true on this show, if you're a naysayer, and I'd love to hear the naysayer who says there's a legitimate reason to want to make ICE agents go maskless, when in fact, almost any of us who've covered law enforcement for any length of time, you run into situations where police will tell you, please don't put that person's face on camera. Don't tell people what that person's name is. That person works undercover. If you give up his identity to the bad guys, he or she may well end up dead. Well, I understand that problem. And so I would venture to say that any reporter out there, and I've done it myself, but any reporter out there who's covered law enforcement understands that at times law enforcement can't afford to have their face seen or their name known. And we know now with Antifa that Antifa loves to go out and threaten these ICE agents and say, we're going to find out where you live. We're going to find out where your family lives. We're going to find out where your kids go to school. And they're going to use that information to try to impede the enforcement of federal immigration laws. And now people like politicians like Bruce Harrell, the mayor of Seattle, they're aiding and abetting the people who are trying to violate federal law. They're going to aid and abet the people who've declared that all cops are bastards. That's an Antifa standard, is that they hate the cops, they hate law enforcement, and they don't exactly have any particular love for the United States of America. They simply want to go after the institution and say, You can't enforce those laws here, as though cities like Seattle and Portland and Chicago are not part of the United States of America. It makes absolutely no sense, but there it is. Glad to have you with me. If you want to answer our X poll today, we put up a brand new poll question every day. Should news media accept new Pentagon rules aimed at restricting leaks? And that is exactly what they're going after. Because you know that many times in many presidential administrations, the Pentagon leaks like a sieve. The information cannot be kept close at hand. And the end result is major media, New York Times, Washington Post, the major television news media, they love to go out and tell the public, by the way, there was this secret information, except we're going to put it on the front page, or we're going to put it at the top of the broadcast. And does that do America any good? Well, there have been times, I would argue, that having the public understand what was going on at the Pentagon, you can bring up the Pentagon Papers, you can bring up the bombing of Cambodia, you can do that. But for every one of those, I think I could easily give you at least a dozen other examples where giving up that information to the public actually puts lives at risk, and we shouldn't be doing it. So, should the news media accept new Pentagon rules aimed at restricting leaks? I would answer yes. That is a reasonable restriction to do. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And always glad to take your phone calls and your emails. Let me mention one other story that really deserves some time because we talked about it a year ago. A young lady, 15 years old, Frances Stout, had walked into the locker room at her school, and she noticed that there was a player in the locker room who happened to be a biological male and who was not wearing clothing. And she complained. And she asked the athletic director whether or not that player was allowed to use her locker room. And the answer was yes. She notified her coach she was unwilling to play against somebody who said, I identify as female, but I am in fact a biological male. According to Stout's mother, Frances was so frustrated that after the game, her daughter walked by the male player and said, you're a man. You know what happened then? Unbelievable. The school began to investigate the young lady for misgendering her opponent. In other words, it's a civil rights violation in the view of the folks who are LGBTQ friendly that if you misgender somebody and you state the obvious factual matter that somebody is a man pretending to be a girl, he was, in fact, 18 years old, so he was an adult man in the locker room, and the player says, look, you're a man, and she ends up under investigation. Does anybody think that makes sense? Glad to be back. I'll get your calls here in just a second at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Coming up in a moment, we'll tell you about six new bad ballot measures coming up for a vote, and all of them involve taxes.
Snowflakes. Yes, you are probably going to be offended. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to tell you about a number of bad ballot measures that are coming up for a vote, and I just want to give you fair warning. I want to get a list for both the state of Oregon and the state of Washington. At this point, most of this is state of Oregon, but measures, and I don't see any point to reading off the numbers. But the folks at the Taxpayers Association have listed all of these, and I think it's a very good list because you're not going to believe some of the things that those in government are saying. We have to have money for this. It's so important. So, for example, City of Portland, Portland Parks levy measure, a 75% tax hike. Now, they're calling it a renewal, but they want to renew it and at the same time raise the rate by 75%. They want to go from 80 cents per $1,000 of home value to $1.40 per $1,000 of home value. The average homeowner will pay out about $300 annually in new taxes, money that could pay for groceries or gas, things like that. An 18% hotel tax hike, and that's going to be disastrous as well for people. You've got about $200 million for shrinking schools. In other words, fewer people going to school, but you're going to raise a few dollars by doing that. Hey, I want to change subjects here. I had hoped to talk to Charles Cuck a little bit earlier. We're going to have to make this fairly quick. Mr. Cuck, welcome to the program. How are you?
Ms. Larson, how are you doing today?
Not too bad, but we're going to have to go fast because we had planned a longer segment. He is founding managing partner of Cuck Baxter Immigration. You specialize in immigration issues. I want to know what you think when some city of Seattle, Washington says our mayor has signed some executive orders. We're going to tell ICE how they can go about their job, whether or not they can wear masks and that sort of thing, and what we can demand that they display on their uniforms. Are they allowed to do that?
Well, they're allowed to pass any laws they want. The question was whether it binds ICE, and it does not, because ICE's activities are controlled by the federal government, not by the state government. That's a political act, not necessarily an act that's going to do anything to ICE's operations.
So it's not going to be legally binding. If the city came out and said, hey, you're wearing a mask, we're going to cite you for this, the ICE officer can simply ignore it because it's not going to bind them in court.
That is correct. That's going to be found to not apply to them in any court in the United States once it gets past the municipal court level.
Why are cities doing this? Do you have an insight into that? Why are they trying to fight so hard against the removal of criminal aliens?
Well, I think a lot of cities are seeing that ICE isn't just arresting criminal aliens. ICE is arresting non-criminal aliens as well. And obviously, as we all seen, some U.S. citizens and permanent residents as well. And I think what they're trying to do is stand up for people that contributed to their city. I mean, however correct or misplaced that may be, considering your point of view, this is all politics, right? This is not an issue that's unsolvable. And we're only having this conversation because Congress won't fix everything. At the end of the day, I would hope that this enforcement activity leads Congress to finally having some courage and doing something that helps the United States instead of being out of session.
Okay, and I agree with getting them back into session. But when you say fix it, we have a working immigration system. We let in more than 1 million a year legally who are allowed to emigrate. It's a process. And then we have a whole bunch of people who've come into the country illegally. What is it that you think they have to fix?
Well, actually, our legal immigration system is actually quite broken. The issues that we've had, at least for the last decade, have been a far larger demand for labor as a result of a vastly reduced birth rate in the United States. A far more dynamic economy than our immigration system and our birth rate allows for, which has resulted in a demand for people, especially in lower skilled jobs, such as farming and manufacturing, and you know, a lot of jobs that are just more difficult than Americans want to do at the wage rate that employers.
I was going to say, if you pay people appropriately, won't they do those hard jobs? And don't we have about 7 million unemployed working age males? Even if you don't count the female workers, you got 7 million unemployed working age males, and it's hard for me to believe they're all trust fund kids. They're getting by somehow, so put them to work.
We look today at a little bit different economy than we did even a year ago, and so today they're in fact, for the very first time in about 15 years, we have more unemployed people than we have job openings. 2 years ago, we had double the number of job openings to unemployed individuals in the United States.
Yep.
So it's a changing dynamic at this point. But still, you're hearing about farmers that can't bring crops in. You're hearing about some companies that, regardless of what they're paying, there are some things that honestly that Americans won't do. I mean, what is your wage to pluck chickens? I mean, how much are you going to work for to pluck chickens? Some of the work is just, you know, obviously you'd say, well, mechanize it or make it simpler. There's, you know, you can't pick tomatoes by machine at the end of the day unless you love those tomatoes. So there are certain jobs that require labor and require.
Actually, there are tomato picking machines and they work pretty well. And there are grape picking machines, which used to be almost exclusively illegals. Mr. Cuck, we're going to have to get you back when we got more time because I'm coming up against the clock right now. But I'd love to have this discussion because I honestly believe that if we told Americans no more freebies, no more Section 8, no more Medicare or Medicaid, no more food stamps, no more subsidized housing, that there'd be more than a few young men and women who'd like to go out there and get a job. And maybe the employers need to come up with the bucks to pay them an appropriate wage. There are lots of dirty jobs out there. Mike Rowe made them famous, but he said, look, pay people appropriately, they'll do really dirty jobs. That's Charles Cuck, who's an immigration attorney, and we'll have him back sometime. You're listening to The Lawrence Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lawrence Larson Show.
15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars. And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lawrence Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And ordinarily, when you see the system come under attack, and I don't mean legal attack, I mean when you see people in the system, whether it's a president, whether it's a governor, whether it's a mayor, a police chief, anybody important who comes under physical attack, ordinarily the system responds very vigorously. How then to understand what happens when a man who plotted, this was not a spur-of-the-moment deal, plotted to kill a Supreme Court Associate Justice, and that is Brett Kavanaugh, traveled cross-country with a gun and gets convicted of the attempted assassination of a Supreme Court Associate Justice and then gets just 8 years behind bars? I thought we'd ask that of my friend Josh Marquis, former DA and former vice president of the National DA's Association. Josh, welcome back to the program. How do we understand what happened here with a judge giving this lenient sentence to Nicholas Roski?
Well, it's a strange case. I mean, there's nothing, like I said, there's something bizarre about a man who actually had been committed to a mental institution several times, Nicholas Roski, who illegally purchased a gun. I mean, he went into a store and concealed the fact that he'd been found crazy. And as you say, flew across country with the express intention of murdering Associate Justice Kavanaugh. This happens in 2021. Many people may have heard about it, but he didn't get sentenced until about a month ago. And then all of a sudden, when he's sentenced, he announces he's really Stephanie Rosco, not Nicholas Rosco. And the judge, a recently appointed judge, a federal judge appointed by Joe Biden, gives him an extraordinarily lenient sentence, about one third of what the sentencing guidelines call for, and seems to be utterly focused on the terrible struggle that this man supposedly had in coming out in his new identity as a woman, which is only a recent pathology he's had, not until recently. And it plays out rather bizarrely on Wikipedia, where Wikipedia announces that anybody who announces themselves as a woman is a woman, even if it's they're doing it for the first time in federal court. So one of the things generally
is let me stop you for a moment there, because I would imagine there are some advantages. I mean, forget about the sex. But there are some advantages that if you're a male and you get locked up with a bunch of other men, even in federal prison, which is usually pretty civilized. I've been inside a bunch of federal prisons as a reporter to talk to inmates. I've never been inside the female equivalent for federal prisons, but I've been in the female equivalent for state prisons. But is there an advantage to saying, yeah, I identify absolutely. As a woman, send me off to these nicer facilities? What did he have to say to this Judge Boardman to persuade
him? Well, apparently
her
he didn't have to say hardly
serious.
Anything. Apparently he had to say virtually nothing. I mean, there was nearly no issue when he gets arrested in 2021 or in 2022 or in any of his lawyer's filings. All of a sudden crops up just before he's sentenced about a month ago. And all of a sudden his lawyers announce, well, he really wants to be called like Sophia or something. And I've gone online and there's, he looks like, in all of his arrest pictures, he looks like a pretty unambiguous guy. But you're right. I mean, generally speaking, correctional facility for women tend to be less violent. Whether it's right or wrong in our society, we tend to view women inmates as somehow less dangerous. And it, as you say, having, you know, if you visited state and federal state institutions, and it's pretty similar, institutions, federal and correctional institutions are generally different for women. There are certainly advantages.
Hold on, Josh, if you're standing in front of any judge in America and you want to make an assertion of something, what does it take? Do you not have to persuade the judge that you've had a dramatic change of circumstances? You just say, I'm a girl, not a guy, and boom, the judge automatically accepts that?
No, any more than you should be able to say, oh, I'm really 75 years old instead of 25, and therefore I need to go to a special medical facility, or, you know, any number of other crazy things. No, there's a lot of outrage about this judge who seemed to have, for completely the sentencing judge, have ignored the fact that this guy, as you say, went through with a pretty elaborate plan. He was clearly intending to actually murder Kavanaugh and went to huge amount of lengths, went to his home, figured out exactly where it was, purchased a Glock pistol, which he shouldn't have been able to do if he'd been honest about who he was. But then the judge seemed to, I'm trying to remember her name, Deborah
Boardman.
Who basically, I looked up her background, is pretty thin. She worked for a Tony law firm right out of law school, then became a federal magistrate, and boom, and was nominated by Biden to become a U.S. district judge, which people need to remember is a appointment for life. The only way you can be removed as a federal judge is by impeachment of the United States Senate in the same manner in which a president is impeached. In other words, it's very, very difficult.
So is there any rational explanation as to why she'd say, well, sentencing guidelines say 24 years, I'm going to give you 8 instead?
No. Unless you believe, apparently as she does, that all you have to do is invoke, as someone who is about to have committed, is now confessing to a violent act, and has been adjudged to be, you know, literally crazy several times, that the defendant can so throw the things into order by just saying, well, I've decided for the first time I'm a different gender, and because of that, I want you to have the sentencing entirely about my conflict and not about your attempt to assassinate, you know, essentially one of the highest government officials in the United States, which would have been unprecedented. There's never been a Supreme Court judge who's been assassinated.
Let me ask you, while we got a minute, let me ask you a technical question. Can the state, can the U.S. government say, we want to appeal this sentence? This sentence is outrageous.
This is what's different about the federal court. In the state court where I've practiced for 43 years, we'd be stuck with it. Pam Bondi, as the attorney general, has announced that they will appeal the sentencing, and there are provisions under federal law for the Circuit Court of Appeals to change and reverse the sentencing. It's highly likely, I would suspect, that it will be.
And if the judge is that incompetent, is there a chance, a snowball's chance, that Congress could say this person should be impeached and removed from the bench?
Usually it's multiple. The judges that have been impeached are very, very few of them, and usually they've been involved in outright corruption. There are some massively incompetent federal judges, but usually they stay on the bench. But it's interesting that for example, the people at City Journal, which is a very respected publication, are calling for her impeachment.
Yeah, impeach Judge Boardman. I'll tell you what, I'd like to know, especially since you point out she's relatively newly appointed, she's relatively young.
Very new.
And she is making colossal errors like this at the beginning of that, where you'd think that she'd be the most careful at the beginning of her career as a full appointed for life federal judge. I think it sounds like maybe she wants Congress to take her up, and maybe Congress should say, hey, we're going to consider you for impeachment. That is Josh Markey, former vice president for the National DA's Association, talking about the man who had planned to kill Associate Justice Brett Kavanaugh, was convicted, and only got 8 years behind bars. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
in control.
Our Constitution is a document in which we, the people, tell the government what it is allowed to do.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. I want to talk about the government shutdown, and I want to talk about one of the key issues that the Democrats are demanding to end the government shutdown. Now, I'm fairly certain that the Democrats are going to bring about the end of this government shutdown, which they own lock, stock, and barrel. Now, I know that some of you are going to say, yeah, Lars, you're one of those conservatives. You're always going to blame the Democrats. No, I think that there have been times where the government is shut down because of the Republicans. This one, though, the circumstances are so clean because the Republicans said, we want to have an operating government. We're willing to pass a continuing resolution, which essentially says, we'll take the budget we're running on right now. We'll run on the same budget for the next couple of months while we talk about all these other issues that we have to decide. That's not a bad way to do it. It's not the best way to do it. The best way would be to have the federal government actually write a real budget every single year, 12 or 13 appropriations packages, have each one voted up or down by the United States Congress, one for defense, one for HHS, one for HUD, one for all the other various agencies, 12 or 13 appropriations packages. Congress isn't willing to do its job. Now, having said that, that applies to both sides. But now let's take a look at what the Democrats have done. The Republicans said we have a bare majority in the House. We will pass a budget bill. And they did. And it was a bipartisan vote. Only Democrats voted against it. Republicans and a couple of Democrats voted for it. Then it goes over to the Senate. And the Senate says, we want to have the government operate. We're willing to pass this continuing resolution. Folks on Capitol Hill refer to it as a CR. Because all it does is take the existing budget and continue it. Now, have there been times in the past where they would say, and let's tag a few things onto the CR? Yeah. Did the Republicans do that this time? Nope. They said, here's a clean CR. It basically just continues the budget the federal government was running on up to the 1st of October when the government shutdown began. It's now the 14th. That's 2 weeks of shutdown. The longest shutdown I could find on record is 35 days. So conceivably, we could go another 20 days of government shutdown. Do I think that's likely? No. I think the Democrats are going to find a way out of this. And as I saw Senator John Kennedy explain the other day, he said, here's how it's going to happen. He says Chuck Schumer is going to go to four or five of his members, and he's going to say, I need you to take one for the team. I need you to go in and vote for the budget package. And offer up some explanation. We must have an operating government, et cetera. He said, then I'm going to have to publicly criticize you for doing it. You know, this is how they arrange the theater that shows that everybody is doing the right thing for the right reasons, et cetera. And then he says they'll vote it through. And the Democrats will wail and gnash their teeth and clutch their pearls and all that. So that's what should be happening. But here's the crazy thing. We've been telling you on this program for weeks now that two of the demands that the Democrats have. Number one, they want illegal alien health care covered. That's Medicaid paid for by taxpayers and applied to illegal aliens. And yes, I've heard from the Democrats who say, well, that can't be happening. They'll actually deny that illegal aliens are getting free health care at your expense. They'll say, but that's illegal. And I've told you, that argument makes as much sense as saying, you mean you're saying people get murdered in America? But that's illegal. Murders can't happen because it's illegal to murder people. Or people are shooting heroin and dying of overdoses. Well, that's not possible. Shooting heroin is illegal in America. It can't be happening at all. I mean, the Democrats are at that sort of low level of intellect to make the argument that we know that illegal aliens aren't getting free health care at taxpayer expense because that would be illegal. Fact is, they do. But the second demand they've made is they want expanded Obamacare subsidies. And I saw a great piece of analysis by Chris Jacobs. He's the guy who heads up the Juniper Research Group, and he wrote The Case Against Single-Payer Health Care. And he starts with a question, are you the kind of person who likes to spend $4 for every $3 you take in? He's thinking of a business person. If so, your financial management skills may qualify you to run for Congress. With people like that running the show, is it any wonder that interest costs on our national debt went past $1 trillion last year for the first time ever? In other words, just to pay the interest on all the money the federal government has already borrowed is costing $1 trillion plus dollars every single year. And then he points out that the Congressional Budget Office took a hard look at what it would cost to extend the Obamacare subsidies. $1.5 trillion in additional spending. Now, the Republicans have not been the best when it comes to holding back on government spending, but the Democrats make them look pale by comparison. He says, all totaled, the Congressional Budget Office says the budget deficit in the most recent fiscal year exceeded $1.8 trillion. Yeah, $1.8 trillion. So, in other words, you have a government that is overspending its income by $1.8 trillion a year, and we've already borrowed so much money and interest rates are so high that it costs $1 trillion just to pay the interest. But he says, but on the whole, you can tell the difference between the budget deficit under the last 2 years of Joe Biden and the first 8 months of Donald Trump. He says, as usual, revenues continued to grow last year, but compared to 2024, he says, with all the tariff income and everything else, spending kept pace with the increased revenue. So the United States government took in more money, but then it spent more money. So he breaks it out into a couple of different areas. And these come up all the time. Some of you will send me emails or call the show. And you'll say, well, I've already paid for Social Security. That shouldn't cost anything. Social Security spending was up by $121 billion. That's an 8% increase. Medicare up by 8%, $72 billion. Medicaid, that's insurance for the poor, $52 billion. Interest up by $80 billion from last year. Veterans Affairs up $41 billion. And then one of the ones that bothers me, refundable tax credits, meaning in many cases earned income tax credits, are up by 13%. So our government has not only been spending a lot of money, but they've been increasing the rate at which they spend. So they're taking a problem and making it worse. Government spending did decline. The Department of Education spent $234 billion less in 2025 than in 2024. Now, think about that. That's a decrease, a quarter of $1 trillion less. And most of that is because of changes to student loans and that sort of thing, and capping some of the student loans at about $50,000. So what do the Democrats say? They say, we have to have those extensions of Obamacare subsidies. They want to put another $350 billion into expanding the Obamacare subsidies. The fact is, we're already so deeply in debt, we can barely pay the interest. Interest costs now are more than what we spend on housing, what we spend on HHS, what we spend on the Pentagon, $1 trillion a year just to pay the interest. And then the Democrats say, we're not going to restart the government until you agree to spend more money on Obamacare, much more money, a third of $1 trillion. Plus, we want you to spend more money to cover every illegal alien in America for free health insurance paid for by the taxpayers. As far as I'm concerned, the Democrats can just sit and wait. It is their shutdown. They can end it when they choose. And when they do, it will not be with more taxpayer-funded health insurance for illegals. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Now, you know that I specialize in kind of crazy questions, so let me ask you one that's going to sound crazy, except it's based on the facts on the ground, and that is, should any state in America spend more money, maybe even a lot more, maybe even double the money that they spend on illegal alien health care than they spend on, say, their state police for an entire state? Well, the state of Oregon is doing just that, more than double what it budgets for the state police. And should taxpayers be footing the bill while law enforcement takes a back seat? And by the way, in case nobody's noticed, federal law says illegal aliens can't get Medicaid, but they're getting it anyway. Emily Kopp joins me now, who's a reporter with the Daily Caller News Foundation. Emily, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you.
What did you find out when Daily Caller Foundation, News Foundation, decided to take a look at the spending on Medicaid and illegal aliens by the state of Oregon?
Just as you said, it's crazy, positively loony. This is an unbelievable statistic that I stumbled across, and the deeper I dug into it, the more unbelievable it got. Oregon will conservatively spend $500 million more on a program to provide full health benefits to illegal aliens than on state police in its current budget period. Now, that's the conservative number, at least $500 million more. Budget documents that I dug into and local reports say that Oregon will spend $1.5 billion on this health program for illegal immigrants, while the Oregon Health Authority told me, well, it's only $1.2 billion. But what's indisputable is that it's hundreds of millions more than the $717 million that the state will spend on state police over the same period. So you don't have to take my word for it or the Daily Caller News Foundation's word for it. That's what the Oregon Health Authority acknowledges.
Yeah,
the Oregon Health Authority...
No, I want you to finish because I've got more questions as always, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this provokes many questions, but one final point I'll just say is that the Oregon Health Authority also acknowledges that the federal government will foot the bill for 25% of this program.
And that's what they're going to pay. The federal government will pay 25%. That means state taxpayers pay the other 75%, right?
Right, right.
Wow. And by the way, I thought the name they originally had on it, and I love... Anytime a government bureaucracy decides to change the name of something, it's usually because that name is already toxic in some way, so they change it. Now they do that, and you know, I'm waiting for the Puppies and Bunnies Act of Congress, you know, because they always try and put we're going to put a happy face on all this. It was originally called Cover All People, which sounds like a well duh. Oh, you've got Medicaid that covers all people, except you know the sort of subtitle that is. And we mean not, you know, non-citizens as well. And they've now changed it to call the Healthy Oregon Program, Healthier Oregon Program, the HOP program, as in hop across the border and we'll give you some free health care. But they, they're doing this despite the fact that the federal law says illegal aliens are specifically forbidden to have health insurance from Medicaid, aren't they?
I mean, I totally agree with you. People should always be wary when there's some euphemism being used. It was interesting, as I was reporting this story, I was reaching out to progressive groups about these figures, and they were suddenly very shy. And I think Cover All People might have given away the game a little bit, that, you know, these are their priorities. You would think that they would want to stand behind their priorities and say, yes, we think it's more important to give illegal aliens health benefits than to provide police protection. But they were very shy about it. And the way that Oregon accomplishes this, it's something that some attorney getting $500 an hour got paid, you know, a lot of money to come up with. It's pretty complicated and screws over everybody else. But Oregon will... collude essentially with hospital systems and insurers and issue what they call a tax, but is really an accounting loophole. They then get federal money matching exactly what they taxed, and then they give the money that they quote unquote tax back to the hospitals and insurers. And basically this is just a scheme, a collusion between the state and these big health systems and insurers to get more federal money without being restricted by the federal rules. So they can get, you know, federal taxpayer money that is technically on the books barred from supporting health benefits for illegal aliens, but use it for whatever they want to do.
Well, see, Emily, that's the part that makes me the angriest. The average person would go to prison. And what I mean, and you tell me if I'm wrong about this. So Oregon looks and says, yeah, we'd like to give Medicaid to illegals, but the federal law says we can't. So what we'll do is we'll go to the hospitals and we'll say, hey, we're going to hit you with a tax, but don't worry, you're going to get all the money. Just pretend that you're angry that you're being taxed. So they hit them with a tax on the and the hospitals then add the cost of the tax to what they bill Medicaid for, And they say, hey, our costs are up. One of the costs of the tax. And then Medicaid gives the hospital more money. And that makes up for the money that was taken away by the state in taxes. And then the state takes the money that they got from the taxes and says, now we have laundered money that's no longer federal money. It's now state tax money, even though it came straight from the hospital. And we can spend it on illegal aliens or anything else we want. Have I misunderstood any of that?
No, that's exactly right. And if you ask the health policy experts at the Paragon Health Institute, they'll say that this is legalized money laundering. And the crazy part is that the Big Beautiful Bill passed back in July sort of had some provisions to curtail this practice. And the major hospital lobby was lobbying to be taxed. So they were saying, we want to be taxed. And how often do you hear of major industries lobbying to be taxed? So that should indicate to you that something's a little off, right? And now, of course, we're, you know, weeks into a government shutdown, and part of the counterproposal that Democrats have put forward would roll back exactly this, these restrictions against the legalized money laundering scheme. So, that's Democrat priorities is money laundering and Medicaid for illegal immigrants.
Emily, I just want people to understand how, I've given them this illustration. You know, if instead of a tax, let's say Emily goes out and gets in a fender bender in her car, and there's $2,000 damage, and she takes it to the store, you know, the car shop, says, hey, I need this damage fixed. And the shop says, yeah, it's about $2,000, but we've got an idea. We'll tell the insurance company it's actually $4,000. And you say, well, why would we want to do that? You say, because then we'll fix the damage on your car, and we'll keep $1,000 of it, and you keep $1,000 of it. We'll just overbill the insurance company. That's what the states are doing. And it's not just Oregon, it's California and other states are telling the hospitals, overbill Medicaid, get the extra money, we'll tax some of it away, launder it, it'll become state tax money, we'll spend it on illegal aliens, which is forbidden under law, and the hospitals will still get more money because they will have artificially inflated their insurance bill. Emily, if you did that or I did that, you know, some kind of scheme where we split the difference and we overbill the insurance company, we'd go to prison. And yet these state officials are getting away with it. I would love to see them prosecuted for it, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard anyone distill it in such a compelling analogy. I think that's really well put.
Well, and of course, we've all been to the car shop, so we've all had that experience. I've never had one, though, where the car guy said, hey, we're going to overbill the insurance company, and then you and I will split the extra. But I can imagine a feloniously inclined person doing that and saying, yeah, overbill them a couple of thousand. You keep $1,000, I'll keep $1,000. The only thing the illicit people out there might do is say, oh, I disagree on the split. I get 60%, you get 40%. You can read what Emily Kopp has put together. She's a reporter with the Daily Caller News Foundation that found out the state of Oregon is going to spend at least $500 million more on illegal alien health care than it spends on its entire state police system. Back in a moment, I'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Your phone calls and emails are next.
The 40th President of the United States always knew where to put the blame.
You have blamed mistakes of the past, and you blamed the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Our X poll today. Should the news media accept the new Pentagon rules that are aimed at restricting leaks from the Pentagon? I would say yes, it's reasonable. You can answer any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let me go first to Kevin. Hey, Kevin, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a couple ideas on how to get the government back to work.
Okay, go for it.
The first is, and it probably won't do much, is every day the government shut down, the senators and the congressmen lose a week's worth of benefits. No medical, no nothing. The second thing...
Hold on, Kevin. Can we start with that idea? Uh-huh. I'm just curious.
Sure.
So all the the 55 senators that voted to pass the bill and continue funding the government, the more than 218 over in the House who voted to fund the government, they get cut off as well? Even the ones who voted to keep operating the government?
I'm afraid yes, because they've got 4 or 5 months to do this in, and then they wait for the last second, then they shut down.
But they voted yes, didn't they?
I know they voted yes, but this is how they need to talk to each other. And the second way, the states that vote no get their benefits cut. The states that vote yes, those people are still getting paid.
When do the states vote, Kevin?
Well, your congressmen and your senators, when they vote, you know, if they got a majority of them say yes, then okay, you get your benefits. If the majority of them say no, then no, you don't get your benefits for that state.
Hmm. By the way, when it comes to the personal side for the members of Congress, you realize that most of those members of Congress, both the Senate and the House, are multimillionaires?
I realize that, so it won't hurt them that bad to take it in their pocketbook.
It won't hurt them at all.
It will hurt them. I know, but what will hurt them is when their constituencies don't get any money, they'll be calling up and say, hey, we want you to change your vote.
Of course, the only way to make that happen, Kevin, would be to have the Congress pass a law, which would take...
Correct.
Take,
I agree.
So in other words, you know, and I understand, you're just saying, let's find a way to punish them. Okay. I get that. I guess I just, and I always get suggestions from people, well, cut the paychecks of Congress. I said, if you cut a $12,000 or $14,000 a month check to a multi-millionaire, do you think he or she is even going to notice it? You think Nancy Pelosi is worried about her $15,000 a month that she gets for being a member of Congress?
I agree. They're not going to feel the hurt like their people are that don't get their paycheck. But like I said, if you have their people not get a paycheck, then they're going to be calling up the congressman or the senator and saying, hey, we want you to change your vote. We want to get paid.
Yep. And by the way, I'm glad to see that President Trump has figured out a way. Apparently, they're going to divert money from other projects within the Pentagon and make sure that our military servicemen and women get their paychecks on time. But I just wish,
correct,
I wish the mainstream media, the legacy old school media, would actually tell the public, this is the Democrats saying we want to spend all this extra money on crazy things like Obamacare subsidies and illegal alien health care. And that's why they're keeping the government shut down, is they're demanding either give us what we're asking for, and it's more spending than the government currently does, or we keep the government shut down. And I also think the Democrats are working against a ticking clock, because the longest shutdown in history is 35 days. We're now at about 14 days right now. So they've got maybe 20 days, unless the Democrats think they could extend it past 1 month. And I don't think that's likely. The average government shutdown, there have been about 20 of them in the last few decades, lasts about 2 weeks. So we're right about at that point, where I would expect either by this weekend or through this weekend, you're going to see the Democrats cave in, because they realize, when they realize this is a losing political issue for them and that they're looking like idiots, they'll find a way to get out of it and save face as much as they can.
Well, I hope they don't save any face at all.
Well, I don't think they will, because I want Americans 1 year from now, when we've got an election coming up, it'll be the 14th of October of 26, will be about, the ballots will already be in the mail at that point in vote by mail places like Oregon and Washington. I want to remind people, these are the folks who shut the government down to get illegal alien health care. These are the folks who shut the government down to get massive subsidies for Obamacare. These are the folks who shut it down and gave Donald Trump the excuse to say, okay, if you want me to send people home, I'll send home non-essential federal workers, and some of them are going to get permanent pink slips. Meanwhile, back here in the Northwest, big votes coming up in the November election. $50 million for a luxury pool, gym, and rec center in Happy Valley. $100 million for a recreation center in McMinnville. $100 million for a pool, rec center, library, and parks. and they think this is a good time to start asking taxpayers, the folks who are having a tough time buying the extraordinarily expensive gasoline, they're having a tough time buying groceries, and this is the time to ask them for a big pile of money for things like a luxury pool? I think that's a terrible idea. Kevin, thanks for the call. Back in a moment, you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday and live on the Radio Northwest Network. We're glad to get your calls in a moment now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, I realize today has become a day of crazy questions, like whether or not we should spend $1.5 billion in the state of Oregon paying for health care for illegal aliens. But add to that this crazy question, taxpayers who approved a bunch of money for construction bonds and are being asked for more are being told that the Portland Public Schools in this case, I'm reasonably sure that other major school districts are probably just as guilty of doing this, that they're going to be building schools that are far bigger than the student populations they already have at a time when the school district knows well that the student populations are not growing, they're shrinking. And that kind of leaves us with a tough situation that's been described best by John Charles, who's president and CEO of the Cascade Policy Institute. And John joins me now. John, welcome back.
Thanks, Lars.
So tell me what Portland Public Schools are doing that within about 4 years, they're going to be the proud owners of schools that are brand new or fully renovated, one or the other, whichever way you want to look at it. And with 3,000 empty desks for students who aren't sitting in those schools and based on the projections are not likely to be sitting in those schools anytime soon?
Well, they already have been building for the last decade, but during that time, the enrollment dropped considerably. So now they're down to the last three high schools, Jefferson, Ida B. Wells, and Cleveland. And they're building them all to a capacity of 1,700 students in the name of equity, because the other high schools, the other six high schools, were built to roughly 1,700 students. But the trouble is, those schools are not going to have that many students by the end of this decade. And so the view of a lot of people, including myself, is that the schools should be downsized to build for the enrollment that they are likely to have, not the enrollment that they fantasize about.
Well, why is there any I guess logical explanation as to why they'd build, for example, Benson High School at 1,700 students when they have 900 and they're fully expecting that student population to drop, not rise? What's the logical explanation as to why they said we have to build them this big?
There is no logic. There's an obsession with something called equity, which can mean whatever you want it to mean. But I would say it means fairness, but it's not fair to taxpayers to overbuild. The last school they opened was Benson, which clearly is way too big. Now the next one up is Jefferson, which has, in May, had about 359 students. And they're going to build that for 1,700. And they're going to build Cleveland and Ida B. Wells for 1,700, but they won't be filled. So I've been telling them this for several years now, that you need to right-size these schools. This is taxpayer money. It's borrowed money. It's going to have massive service impacts the next 20 years. And debt service cannibalizes general fund money in the out years. And that's the legacy to future board members and staff is you're bequeathing massive amounts of debt.
If you go back over the 10 years you've been covering this, John, was there ever a time when they had projections saying we expect that our student population is going to get bigger, not smaller?
Yes, about 15 years ago, it was perhaps reasonable to think that enrollment might grow. But that's been not true for at least the last decade, and I think they've lost about 10% of the enrollment in just the last 6 years. So this is definitely, they've known in enough time to put the brakes on the current expansion, but they refuse to consider that. And I should say, by the way, that that's not true everywhere. Beaverton High School is now being rebuilt as we speak for 1,500 students, and that's only about what they have now. But they are planning, they are leaving land aside for a possible addition of 800 in the future if necessary. And they're only doing that for $253 million now, whereas the Portland schools are all being forecasted at costing over $460 million apiece for 1,700 students.
Now, could Portland have done that same thing? Said, we're going to build Benson. It's 400 kids now, 359. We'll build it for 600, but we've got land and space available, and we'll build the building so that if later on we want to add on to it and make it much bigger, hundreds bigger, or maybe even 1,000 bigger, they could do that. They could have done that, couldn't they?
They actually had a plan. That in 2020, they published a final conceptual plan for Jefferson that indicated they would build for 1,000 students and leave open the possibility of an additional wing in the future for 700 more if necessary. And that was, the plan was drafted and submitted to the board. But within 3 years, that whole plan was junked, and they decided to build the 1,700 and also keep all the kids on site into a dangerous construction site, which would extend the cost and the number of years to build it. It makes no sense.
Well, and the equity idea you mentioned, this effectively says if we're going to build schools, they all have to be the same size so that nobody can say, well, you gave 1,700 to Benson and you only gave 1,300 to Jeff and you only gave, 1,100 to Cleveland. That they're saying right. The equity comes in building the same size school in every neighborhood, no matter how big or small the population is?
Yes, and that's absurd because a bunch of empty seats does not make the current students any better off. And frankly, most parents prefer smaller schools.
Do we have any idea what they're going to do with all this space? Do they mothball it, bait and plastic off some wings of the school, and just say we're going to let it sit there and maybe someday we'll use it, or what?
What else can you do? Yes, we're building.
Oh, I can imagine a lot of things they might do with it, John. Can you?
Yes, most of them not useful.
Well, no, or political. You could say, well, we need a community center. Well, let's invite a bunch of NGOs to take up shop here. I mean, I'm not yet the point where they're going to start bedding down homeless people there, but I can imagine them helping out their NGO friends. I can imagine
that's already built into their plans. I just think they're going to have entire floors closed off and nothing happening. And that's just taking money that could be used for other actual educational functions. It's just wasting money for symbolic purposes.
And then they're going to turn around and tell the taxpayers, we have all this debt service we have to make on these gigantic schools that we didn't have to build. And because of that, we don't have enough money to pay the teachers who are actually teaching your kids. So you're going to have to give us an increase. Have I got any of that wrong?
No, debt service is the tapeworm to a general fund. So,
tell my audience where they can get a hold of a copy online, because I know they're going to want to share it with folks.
A copy of what I wrote should be on our website, cascadepolicy.org.
Very good. Cascadepolicy.org. The man at the top is the president, CEO of Cascade Policy, and that's John Charles. Coming up in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. And we got to talk about a young lady who wants to become the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. And yet, when asked the question, should men be allowed to be in the girls' locker rooms with no clothes on? She can't answer yes, and she won't answer no.
Go Gun Control Explained.
Want to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers? Ban sober drivers. That's how gun control works.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I know that you're not going to be surprised that I side with the young lady who's running for governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Winsome Earl Sears. I believe that she is the best candidate. I've been following her career for a long, long time. And I know it won't surprise you at all, although I'm not doing this on a partisan basis. I'm doing it on the basis of whether or not a politician will actually answer questions and provide acceptable answers on one of the biggest and most concerning issues for people everywhere in America. Let me get into the details of that, because the Virginia governor's race has become very much about one issue. I mean, there are other issues that the candidates have been talking about, but the one issue is whether or not that governor is willing to protect young girls in school when they go to the restroom, when they go to the locker room, when they disrobe to take a shower or change into sports gear of one kind or another, or back into their street clothes. Will that governor actually protect those young ladies? And the answer is no from the Democrat, and I'll explain why I say that. It is yes from the Republican candidate, Winsome Earl Sears. So let me first invite you to the program. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we always put naysayers right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our poll on X. The daily poll question can be found at Lars Larson Show on X. You're going to find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. So let me introduce the players. There is Abigail Spanberger, Democrat, running for governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, you could tell as I watched the entire debate, but I wanted to pull out some excerpts of it to talk about this here. It turns out that Virginia's Democrat gubernatorial candidate, Abigail Spanberger, has been asked over and over and over again, do you believe that trans-identifying men, meaning biological men who call themselves by women's names and say they identify as women, should they be allowed into girls' locker rooms? Now, it's a very easy question to ask. It's a very easy question to answer. And it's one that Abigail Spanberger has been clear she knew the question was going to be asked. It has been asked before. And even in the debate, the moderators of the debate got clearly frustrated because she would not answer the question. Take a listen to their first attempt.
What do you make of Earl Sears' claim that you're fine with, quote, putting men in girls' locker rooms?
The reality is that the federal government has the ability to change the letter of the law, right? Through Congress, through the Senate, bills go to the president's desk. Right now, what we are seeing is there are differences between what is the law of the land under Title IX and what are executive orders put out by the White House.
No, except for this, Abigail Spanberger is not being honest. During the years of Obama, when President Obama was in office, he directed his Department of Education to send what's called a Dear Colleagues letter out to school districts around America. And in that letter, it said, we look at Title IX, and we believe that Title IX insists that you must treat transgender biological men who call themselves women, you have to treat them as women, and you have to accommodate them as women. So the change was made, and I know that Abigail Spanberger did not disagree with it when Barack Obama did it, and he didn't do it through an act of Congress. He did it not even through an executive order. He did it by writing a Dear Colleague letter and having it sent out by the Department of Education. But she says it's the job of Congress to get it done.
The reality is the federal government has to be clear in what is the real guidance available to our schools as it relates to use of locker rooms. The reality is that we have multiple jurisdictions who believe they are following the letter of the law and have their lawyers conveying why. And at the end of the day, we have a president of the United States who is taking away and threatening federal funding.
Yeah, he's threatening federal funding. So somehow Abigail Spanberger, who I'm guessing is about as dumb as a bag of hammers, is saying, I'm not clear on what Donald Trump's position on this is. Do you think anybody in America does not understand that Donald Trump has said you can't have biological men sharing the locker rooms of little girls? And you just simply cannot do it. He is absolutely as crystal clear as you possibly can be. So then the same subject came up during a debate.
Should transgender girls who are biological males be allowed to use girls' bathrooms and play on girls' sports teams? You have 60 seconds.
I think it's important that we have parents and teachers and administrators making decisions about their individual schools, not politicians.
Now, there's a problem with this because she just finished saying it should be the U.S. Congress writing a law that defines that only girls can go in the girls' locker room. And then she changes and says, no, it should be decided by local politicians in local communities. So she's gone all the way from saying Congress should make a law down to your local community should decide whether or not boys can go in the girls' locker room as long as those boys call themselves by girls' names. And then this soundbite.
In cases across Virginia, I think it's incumbent upon parents and educators and administrators in each local community to make decisions locally.
That's what this is about.
Ms. Earl Sears?
There should never be nude men in locker rooms.
Oh, my goodness, we finally have her saying that, but you voted for that.
Yeah, and there's the thing. I think Abigail Spanberger goofed. She had a gaffe where she accidentally told the truth. She is the mother of three girls, and she just said we should not have naked men in the locker rooms or in the shower rooms of the girls. Well, that's when Winsome Earl Sears, the Republican candidate, really weighed in on this.
I'm not for discriminating against anyone. What I'm saying is just very plain common sense, and I'm going to answer the question my opponent refused to answer, which is simply this. I will not rescind the governor's executive order. We know that girls want to have privacy. It's really that simple.
It really is that simple. And the executive order she's talking about from Governor Glenn Youngkin says boys use the boys' locker room, girls use the girls' restroom and locker room. And that's the executive order. The question is, will Abigail Spanberger tell anybody what her real position is? Now let's go to your calls. Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I was calling about the government shutdown. And in particular, I saw a news story today that claimed that the professional activists are pressuring the Democrats to hold off on opening it until after this weekend's big No Kings demonstration.
I think that's entirely possible. They may be looking at timing, and I would never say that Chuck Schumer would not be affected by politics. So do I think they're holding out until they get after the No Kings demonstration this weekend? Probably, but I'm not sure they're gaining much with the public. And Mike, I think every one of those people on Capitol Hill looks at everything they do and everything they say and says, does this actually add up to a positive for me and my party? And if it doesn't, then they do something else. So I don't know if they're going to be fortunate enough to get Chuck Schumer to hold off. But who does it benefit when you say we shut the government down for nothing and then we finally agreed to vote for the bill that we voted for 13 times before, and now we voted for it without gaining a single thing? I think Chuck Schumer is going to have egg all over his face, and now he's trying to figure out how to get out of this mess. Thanks for calling, Mike. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We've been talking a lot about the government shutdown forced by the Democrats who refuse to go for what is called a clean CR. That is basically just a status quo budget, nothing added, nothing subtracted. And the Republicans have been clear about this when reporters keep asking, well, what are you going to negotiate? Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, says, we didn't add anything to this. It is the current status quo budget. The Democrats want us to add all these things like illegal alien health care and also an expansion of the Obamacare premium tax credits. I thought we'd talk about it with Veronique Desrougis, who's the George Gibbs Chair in Political Economy and Senior Research Fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason. Hey, Veronique, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Lars.
Do I have to refer to you as Chair Desrougis? Although I'm sure they do at the university. Okay, very good.
No.
You've been Veronique for too many years for that. So tell me this.
Exactly.
Do we have the potential to actually reduce the cost paid by taxpayers if the Republicans don't cave in to this demand to have the COVID era expansion of Obamacare premium tax credits? Say, nope, it's not going to get added. Yeah. Does that bring the cost down?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the total spending over 10 years would be around $488 billion
wow.
if we keep them in there with interest. That's with interest. It's 410. Oh, no, it's actually 110. Sorry. So the spending would be $188 billion, and the impact on the deficit, including interest, would be $410 billion. I mean, it's enormous. It's large. And the other thing is the Republicans, I mean, if you want to understand how much the Democrats have caused this shutdown, it's like effectively, legally, this is what the Biden administration passed, right?
Yep.
Is that these COVID extension in the law, they are set to expire. That was the plan. They're supposed to expire at the end of the year. And the Democrats are saying, never mind. We want this extension to continue. We want the spending to increase, and we want the deficit. And who cares about the deficit? So they wrote this into the law, and now they're like, yeah, never mind.
And by the way, these are COVID area expansions. They said we've got to have this because we have this national emergency involving COVID. But the emergency has been over for years now. Is there any rational reason to expand or extend these benefits when the emergency is over?
Yeah, of course, that's the most straightforward answer. But there's also the fact that what the COVID era extension did, effectively what it did is that it lifted the caps on the income restriction. So it means that now, and also it expanded the share or the amount of the premium that is covered by the tax credit. So the tax credit are bigger and they go to more people, including families who make $500,000 a year. I mean, these are like not subsidies for lower income people. Like ending them is saving money to taxpayers, and it's not hurting middle class Americans who are getting their health care through the exchanges, nor lower income Americans.
Well, the other issue, and let me throw it out and you tell me if I'm going up the wrong road, but the Democrats will always complain about corporate welfare. And yet in this case, if you've got 12 million people signed up for Obamacare who filed not a single medical claim in all of 2024, so they were covered by insurance, they didn't file any claims, yet the money that was paid on their behalf still went straight to the insurance companies or to the healthcare institutions. So isn't that corporate welfare to beat the ban?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the insurance are the one pocketing the taxpayer subsidies. And they're pocketed on behalf of the people who are buying these exchanges, these health plans, because they're now, you know, there just seems beneficial when most of the premium are paid for by taxpayers, and they're not using it, and the insurers are pocketing the subsidy.
Okay, so it's a great big bailout for the insurance companies, which, in some ways, I'm glad that we don't have Republicans being roped in on this, because I know that a lot of the Republicans like to make friends with the health insurance industry as well. Go ahead.
Watch out. Because, I mean, there's some in the Senate who, and even in the House, that are actually would like to find a deal to maybe extend these subsidies. And we're not out of the woods yet. Shortly before, like 2 days into the shutdown, there were rumors that there were some Republicans who were about to cave. So, you're absolutely right. But so far, I mean, let's give them credit. So far, they're not caving. And the other thing is, like, they really don't have to do anything. You just need to wait it out because, you know, by December 2025, I hope we'll be reopened by then. Though, actually, that's debatable. Anyway, but the...
but Veronique, isn't the longest shutdown on record... Isn't it something like 35 days is the longest on record? And the average, when I looked them up, it looked like it was about 2 weeks, maybe 16 days. So we're getting close to the average length.
Yes.
And even if they went for the record, it's basically sometime around the first part of November, right?
Well, so the reason why a lot of them are 16 days and such is because usually what it means is that with past 16 days, or whatever, you hit the first time where people don't get paid, right? And so the pressure starts mounting, and then the second round, the 35 days that was in during the first President Trump term, and that's usually like the pressure becomes enormous after two. You know, not having been paid twice. And that's, I mean, I feel really sorry for these people.
So do I.
This is not the way. First, there are people who are still going to work. And that's the other thing is like, after a while, people who are supposed to work because they're essential but are not being paid start to not showing up for work. So that starts causing problems too. But this is just not the right way to actually reduce government spending. In fact, shutdowns are expensive. They turn out they're more expensive than, and this is totally useless. By the way, you want to know how much Democrats, they're shutting down the government because they want, the proposal that they've put forward on the table would add $1.5 trillion in spending.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, the other one that is just unconscionable, it's one thing to talk about Obamacare premium tax credits from a COVID emergency that's long over. But then when they say, oh, we want to change the rules so that illegal aliens who are illegally in the country can get federally funded Medicaid coverage for health insurance. Again, a gift to the health, to the hospital industry, but also a gift to illegal aliens who aren't supposed to be here to begin with. And this is who the Democrats want to support? Veronique, congratulations on your elevation to the George Gibbs Chair in Political Economy at George Mason and also Senior Research Fellow at the Mercatus Center. Veronique, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. We'll get back to your phone calls and emails in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Honestly provocative talk for the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho.
Talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We got to get to those new Pentagon rules that have the mainstream media, well, with its knickers in a twist, for lack of a better way to describe it. So, should the news media accept the new Pentagon rules that are aimed at restricting leaks out of the Pentagon, liberal publications, and now some mainstream publications, even some conservative publications online, have said, we're not going to go along with these rules. So, what are the rules? I mean, they're actually very simple and very easy to understand. Number one, the Pentagon, which is about 11 million square feet, it is literally the biggest office building on planet Earth. as well as being the headquarters for the U.S. military. But it's basically a giant office building. I've been inside the Pentagon. I've been in that center area where there's actually kind of a big courtyard. I mean, it's a couple of acres with trees and grass and all that. And what Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, says, Pentagon access is a privilege, not a right. And, of course, you've got mainstream media saying, no, we have a First Amendment right to go there. You know what? All the people who are launching that objection, and I want access to government just like the next guy, you hear me complain from time to time. I'll say, we asked Governor so-and-so to come on the program. Governor Kotek never has. Governor Brown never did. Governor Kitzhaber, before he resigned in disgrace, never did. Most of the governors, Governor Inslee, Governor Christine Gregoire, Governor Ferguson, have always refused to come on. Do I have a First Amendment right to force them to come on? No, I don't. Do I have a First Amendment right to wander around any government building? And generally, the answer is no. I mean, the areas that are already open to the public, you can go to those places. But try to go to your local police department and see if you can get past the front desk. Well, that takes a card key, and you got to have a visitor's badge. So, knowing all that, knowing that all the reporters who regularly cover news in Seattle or Portland or Eugene or Tri-Cities or anything else, compare this. Number one, you can't just wander around the 11 million square feet of the Pentagon. Now, apparently reporters were able to do that. I would imagine it was tremendously useful for reporters because if I could just wander around that building and make friends and engage people in conversation, it would give me a real edge because I might make friends with people who'd say, oh, hey, I'll tell you about all the cool stuff that's going on here. So you can't just wander around. Number two, press corps has to wear a visible badge so that everybody knows that you're a member of the press. And then number three, credentialed press are no longer permitted to solicit criminal acts. You know what I think is behind that one? The best news stories. I'm not saying they're the best for America, because they're not the best for America, but the best news stories are when you get somebody inside of a military organization like the Pentagon to tell you secret stuff that's going on. I mean, as a reporter, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say, hey, those are the coolest stories. I mean, occasionally you hear me talk about things on this program where I say, hey, this is happening inside of this agency or that agency or the other agency. Oftentimes they're state and local agencies. I mean, some of the crap that's going on inside the Portland Police Bureau, where they have, because of their DEI nonsense, they literally have men and women who are trying to become police officers who fail over and over again to the point where their training officers say, you should dismiss this person. This person will not make a good cop. And then command says, no, let that person pass. We want them in. We're trying to meet a quota. That's going on right now inside police agencies here in the Northwest. So, what are you not allowed to do? Walk around free, you know, just wandering around the office of the Pentagon. Number two, you have to wear a visible badge. Everybody knows what you're up to. And number three, credentialed press is no longer permitted to solicit criminal acts like, hey, could you get me a copy of that top secret document where we're talking about what happened in Iran or we're talking about the aftermath of October 7th? You're not allowed to do that anymore. And the mainstream media is saying, we're not going to agree to that. Really? You're not going to agree that when you're in somebody else's territory, whether it is a private company or a public agency like the Pentagon, you're not going to go for that? Let's go to Ted in Gig Harbor. Hey, Ted, thanks for listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, Lars, I worked for the Boeing Company, a contractor to the Pentagon, for 42 years.
Yep.
Never, ever, ever did I see a visitor that wasn't checked in at security, given a badge, and had an escort. I cannot for the life of me believe that our customer, the Pentagon, ever let a visitor in without a badge. That is insane to me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ted. I mean, I can't. I was talking to the NBC affiliate about this yesterday, KGW. And I said, look, there, I was proud of the fact I got some companies to let me in. And they said, we have never allowed the press in here before. And we're only doing it because you persuaded us that we can trust you. And some of that is trust. And some of it is safeguarding information that the public knows should not be out. And the idea that reporters could just wander around the Pentagon and chat up anybody they wanted and not be identified. Every big company, Intel, Boeing, I think I was in Boeing's facility once or twice. I'll bet if you go to Microsoft, you have a visitor's badge, and it has to be visible. Right. And if they don't see a visible badge, they say, hey, sir, can I help you? Where are you going? And who's with you? Right?
Yeah. And you have to state your reason, your purpose for the visit, and who you're going to see. And if they were patriots, Lars, they would want to wear that badge. They would want to jump through those hoops.
And by the way, when you go to the White House, same deal. Got to wear the visitor's badge. It's got to be visible. Same.